It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, we welcome you to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. This weekend show is featuring Republican Congressman Tom McClintock, who represents the Motherlode region. Congressman McClintock, it's great to have you back on Motherlode Views.
It's good to be back, BJ. Thanks for having me.
Is it nice being back in the district away from Washington, D.C. for a while?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's good and crazy back there, as everybody knows. The good news is that I think things are going to come to a head in the next few years, and we're going to get a very clear statement from the American people on what road they ultimately wish to travel.
Yeah, how would you kind of define the state of things right now in D.C.?
Well, I think that we're at a crossroads on a number of critical issues for the future of our country, issues that have made or broken civilizations down through the centuries. If you look to Rome, many of the same forces that tore it apart are now descending on our country. The collapse of our borders, collapse of the value of our dollar because of massive government overspending. An age-old struggle between two antithetical forces, freedom and socialism.
You know, the Congress, the House has a relatively new speaker, Mike Johnson. How do you feel he is faring so far?
Well, he's got a great deal of challenge ahead of him. The House majority is at an historically slender margin, two votes, I believe. The fundamental problem, though, is what I just mentioned, that our entire system is based on compromise. And for years, you know, I've argued with liberals over the size and the scope of the government. But we always agreed on the fundamentals. We always agreed on freedom of speech. We always agreed that you should be judged on the content of your character and not the color of your skin. We all believed in due process of law, of equal justice under law. So we could agree on all the fundamentals, and then it was just a question of degree of detail. The modern left, which has taken such a stranglehold over the Democratic Party, shares none of those values. And so compromise starts to break down. And I think that's where we're seeing the country heading, and that's and Congress is simply a reflection of the country. That said, I do believe that we are, as a nation, going to reach a conclusion in the very near future, probably in the next election or two.
What's your kind of reaction to this rematch that looks on the horizon between President Biden and former President Trump?
Well, as I said in 2016, I said in 2020, and I'm saying again in 2024, you know, Donald Trump was not my first choice, not even my second choice. But I can sure as hell tell the difference between a fire and a fireman. And if a fireman's trying to save my house from burning down, I really don't care if from time to time he behaves like a bit of a jerk. And I think that's the problem most people have with Donald Trump. It's not his policies. It's his manner. But, you know, we don't always get the perfect choice. And, you know, to those who say, well, I'm just not going to vote this year, I hate the direction the country's going. But I just don't like all the mean tweets. I would suggest bearing in mind Ogden Nash's little poem. He said, "They have such delicate palates, they can find no one worthy of their ballots. Then when someone terrible gets elected, they say, there, that's just what I expected." Well, when people ask me, how could all of this be happening to our country? I mean, the collapse of our borders, the record in inflation, you know, all of the, you know, skyrocketing cost of gasoline. How could all of these things be happening so quickly to our country? And my answer is, if you voted for Biden, this is exactly what you voted for, because this is what he promised to do. This is what he's done. And this is what the Democrats have defended for the last 3 years. And I think, as I said, we're seeing a political realignment take place. Reliable Democratic constituencies, inner city voters, for example, are now dealing with the crime and the massive influx of illegal immigration that's draining their services, draining their city's coffers. They're starting to have a change of mind. Jewish voters who care about Israel are watching this administration sell out Israel at every turn now and having a great deal of second thoughts. So we're seeing this all across the country, and I think it's going to mean a very big shift in the political alignments of the country over the next generation or two. This truly is an historic time.
The immigration bill that had some early bipartisan momentum but then kind of fizzled out, did you like that bill at all?
No, it was a terrible bill, and I'll tell you why. Current law, if it was simply enforced, would solve our immigration problems. It did under Donald Trump. Under Donald Trump, when he left office, the border was more secure than it's been in our lifetimes. The Remain in Mexico policy had slowed illegal immigration to a trickle. The border wall was nearing completion. We were enforcing court-ordered deportations, and the border was secure. On his first day in office, Joe Biden reversed all of those policies. The laws didn't change. The president changed. When I was down at Yuma a year ago talking to the Border Patrol down there, I said, well, we're the Congress. We can't enforce laws. We can write laws. So what laws do you need us to write? And they all said, we don't need new laws. We simply need to enforce the laws that we already have. When I was at Eagle Pass in January, the head of the Border Patrol there says, look, I'm standing in front of an open fire hydrant with a bucket. I don't need more buckets. I need somebody to turn off the hydrant. That requires the president to act, and so this is not because of incompetence. It's not because of fate. It's because of a deliberate decision by this administration to open our borders wide open, and it is so far, and just since Inauguration Day, allowed over 6 million illegal immigrants into this country. That's a population the size of the state of Missouri, our 18th largest state that has 8 congressional districts. That's the amount of illegal immigration that this administration has allowed in. Now, the Senate bill would have made it impossible for the next president to secure those borders. That Senate bill, that so-called bipartisan Senate bill, made it impossible for the president to turn back illegal immigrants until the flow reached 4,000 a day. That's what, 1.5 million a year? Well, is that an improvement over Biden? Yes. But it would have made the next president, and I hope that's going to be President Trump, it would have made it impossible for him to take the actions that he took that actually secured our border. That was a giant step backwards.
So you think the president could fix this by himself and it wouldn't have to take any action from Congress?
The president did fix this himself. Donald Trump did fix this. It was Joe Biden that reversed those policies, and we're dealing with the results today. We have passed a number of bills out of the House, particularly H.R. 2, which I had a big part of. I chair the Immigration Subcommittee, that would make it much harder for future presidents to ignore our laws and would make it much easier for future presidents to enforce our laws. That bill passed the House. It's sitting in the Senate right now. And again, that's one of the decisions the American people are going to have to make in November.
Need to take a break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
We're talking with Republican Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views, who represents the Motherlode region. Congressman McClintock, you've taken a number of votes in recent months that have been in opposition of some leaders of your party. One was the TikTok so-called ban. I'm curious your thoughts on that piece of legislation.
Well, I don't think that the answer to Chinese propaganda is Chinese oppression. I don't believe that the answer to Chinese censorship is more censorship. That's essentially what this bill does. You know, if propaganda is a problem, then we should warn people and let them make their own decisions. That's what freedom of speech is all about. If data privacy is a problem, let's warn people and then allow people to make their own decisions. The fact of the matter is, many, many Americans have decided to choose this as one of their social media platforms. To me, that's a freedom of speech issue. This business of forcing any company to divest itself because we don't like its politics or to simply shut down is antithetical to the founding principles of our country and the fundamental principles that define our freedom as Americans.
I believe you said earlier, too, that between liberals and conservatives, freedom of speech was an issue right now that's kind of a controversial issue. What do you kind of mean by that? What are the debate going on?
Well, we see the government pressuring social media platforms to censure material that the government doesn't like. We've now had a number of court cases where the courts have found this to be the case. That's completely intolerable in a free society. Freedom of speech is the beating heart of a democracy. It's how we as a society chart our path. We have a great big discussion and everybody gets to weigh in. Speech can be hateful, it can be silly, it can be stupid, but it's not dangerous as long as all have the freedom of speech to counter it. How do you tell truth from lies? You put the two side by side and then trust the American people to tell the difference. How do you decide between wisdom and folly? What's right and what's wrong? You put them side by side and let the people make their decisions. We've based our entire form of government on the assumption that more than half the people are right more than half the time. And I think that's a solid assumption. But that it all depends upon everyone having the right without fear to weigh into the discussion. Look back to the terrible decisions that were made during the COVID lockdowns. I mean, we knew from the very beginning that the virus posed virtually no threat to children, but was deadly to the elderly. But we suppressed the discussion on that. And what did our decision makers do? Well, they shut down all of the schools and packed our elderly hospitals with COVID patients. We knew from the beginning that obesity was a major contributing factor, but we suppressed the debate. And what happened? Well, they closed the gyms and left the liquor stores open. We knew from the beginning that outdoor transmissions of this virus were virtually unknown, and that 80% of the transmissions occurred in people's homes. But what did we do? We suppressed the debate and ended up seeing parks and playgrounds closed and people forced into their homes where the vast majority of transmissions occurred. This is what happens when you censor a free discussion in a democracy, and we can never allow that to happen again.
You know, staying kind of on the topic of regulations, another one of those issues that'll be more on the horizon is artificial intelligence. What do you kind of see as the federal's role when it comes to regulating that industry?
As little as possible, in my view. I'm not ready to light my hair on fire over artificial intelligence. I mean, that's simply the technology that improves the ability of our digital world to sort through data. Every technological advancement has concomitant problems, But in the past, we've always worked through those problems and reaped the benefits of technological advancements. There was a movement two centuries ago, the Luddite movement, that came unglued over the technological advances of its time and tried to shut them down. Human progress depends upon freedom, and I think a lot of the angst over artificial intelligence is overstated and overblown, and can become downright dangerous if the result is overregulating it.
Around the time that the President Biden did his State of the Union address, he put out his new budget proposal. What were your big takeaways from the budget?
I'm appalled. This administration has now added some $6 trillion to the CBO's baseline spending over the next 10 years. $6 trillion. Every $1 trillion we throw around so casually in Washington is $8,000 from an average family's earnings. So when I say we've added $6 trillion to the debt, that's about, $48,000 of additional debt on every household in this country. And this at a time when we're now running a $34 trillion overall debt, the largest in our nation's history, as large as it was at the end of World War II when we had strained all of our resources in this major world war. We're already there, which means we don't have the means to respond to a new global danger if we are faced with one as we were in 1941. So this becomes a national security issue as well. We cannot continue to spend at unsustainable levels. And yet this administration is not only putting on the brakes, it's hitting the accelerator. And we're already feeling that. I mean, the inflation over the past 3 years is now 18%. That means that if you had $100,000 sitting in a retirement fund on inauguration day, that $100,000 now only purchases $82,000 worth of goods. All of that free money turns out to be very expensive, and you pay it back every day at the supermarket and the gas station.
What would you like to see done to slow that inflation?
Well, we have to do the same thing that Harry Truman did. You know, as I said, there's one other time in our history when we had a debt as large as this one relative to our GDP. It was at the end of World War II. Harry Truman, for fiscal year 1946, abolished the excess profits tax. He slashed federal income tax rates. He cut the federal budget from $85 billion down to $30 billion in a single year. He fired 10 million federal employees. It's called war demobilization. The Keynesians at the time predicted 25% unemployment, a second Great Depression. Instead, we got the post-war economic boom. So we can grow our way out of this, but it's going to require a dramatic reduction in spending, and I would also say a dramatic reduction in the regulatory burdens that are crushing the productivity of this country. Where do you start? Well, it's first of all, a lot of low-hanging fruit. First, why don't we stop admitting millions of impoverished illegal immigrants that are consuming hundreds of billions of dollars from the social safety net that was meant for Americans? Let's stop all of these subsidies that hide from consumers the true price of the products that they're selecting in the marketplace. Why don't we stop all of these grant handouts? And instead, if the federal government needs a service, it ought to put out an RFP, accept the lowest responsible bidder, and then you have a contract. But throwing money around the way we do, robbing one community to pay for a project that solely benefits another, this amount of waste has become endemic in the entire system. And then we've got to deal with the entitlement programs. And I think there are very responsible programs that would put Social Security and Medicare back on a fiscally sustainable track, would preserve it for future generations and balance it over time. And that includes age adjustments for those just entering the workforce to reflect the increased lifespan that we're seeing today relative to when the system was established in the 1930s, as well as a premium support system for Medicare, basically a Medicare Advantage for those who've not yet entered the system. And then finally, long term, I don't see any alternative but a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution and giving the president line item veto authority, as most governors already have, to reduce appropriations within a bill without being given the Hobson's choice of signing or rejecting the entire bill.
You take one more break, talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm PJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. We'll be back in just a moment.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, joined in studio today by Motherlode Republican Congressman Tom McClintock. Congressman McClintock, we haven't talked too much about natural resource issues. I know that's an area that you keep close tabs on. What are kind of the things that you're watching right now?
Well, the two things I've focused my attention on for the last 16 years in Congress is fire and water. Neglect of our forests to the point where they become morbidly overgrown and now succumbing to disease, pestilence, often drought, and ultimately catastrophic wildfire. I mean, this is a simple case of benign neglect, which turns out isn't so benign. And this is a result of the environmental laws that have made the scientific management of our forests all but impossible since they were imposed in the 1970s. And the same thing is true of water. The same environmental laws that have made management of our forests all but impossible have made it virtually impossible to build new water storage facilities or even complete our existing ones. I mean, simply completing the Shasta Dam, a dam that was begun in 1944. It was finished in 1944, was built to 600 feet. It should be 800 feet. It was designed to be 800 feet. They didn't need the extra storage at the time, so they left it for our generation to finish, and our generation never has. Simply finishing that simple project would add another 9 million acre feet to water storage on the Sacramento system, which would almost double the amount of water we can store on the entire system. And yet we now lack the political will to do so because we impose these environmental laws that have run up the cost of these projects beyond the ability of the projects to support. We have to fundamentally reevaluate the approach we've taken to these issues in the cause of environmentalism over the past 50 years. These laws have not improved the forest environment. They've not improved our riparian habitats. There's nothing more devastating to a riparian habitat than a flood or a drought. It was the dams that moderated those forces and preserved these habitats through droughts as well as through floods. We've got to get back and ask ourselves some fundamental questions, and the most important is, are these things working? Are these things working for the people that rely on them, and are they working for the environment? And the answer to both questions is no, they're not. They're failing miserably. So we took a wrong turn in the 1970s, and I think now living with the result of this folly, people are starting to reevaluate how we approach these questions of resource management. Think about it. Everything in this room, everything that makes your life comfortable, everything that makes it possible is either mined or it's grown. I don't know of any exceptions to that. Everything in our lives, it's either mined or grown. And what these laws have done have made it all but impossible to mine or grow the resources that are necessary to support a comfortable civilization. And this is self-destructive, and it's ultimately not sustainable.
On forest resource bills, with the House in Republican hands, the Senate in Democratic hands, is there anything out there that could be bipartisan on the horizon?
Well, I'm hoping I can get a hearing on, or a floor vote, rather, on my H.R. 188. As you recall, a few years ago, we were able to get my bill into the WIN Act of 2017. And what this bill said was that for certain forest thinning projects. The Forest Service can establish a categorical exclusion to basically streamline the environmental laws that are making forest management all but impossible. Right now, if you want to thin out a section of forest, under the National Environmental Policy Act, it's going to take an average of 4 years to complete the environmental studies and millions of dollars. What this bill did was to say for forest thinning projects under certain circumstances that are designed to improve the fire resiliency of the forest, you can do that in less than 4 months with only a few dozen pages of analysis. That we had to limit it to the Tahoe Basin. But it is what saved the city of South Lake Tahoe from the Caldor Fire. That simple change in the law of not only reduced the evaluation time from 4 years to 4 months and 800-page reports down to a few dozen, the effect of that was to triple the amount of acreage that has been treated in the Tahoe Basin. And increased the harvest off of the federal lands by about 9 million board feet a year. And the result was this. When the Caldor Fire came barreling toward the city of South Lake Tahoe, it hit one of the tracks that had been treated under this new authority. The fire lay down and firefighters were able to stop it. Right across the boundary line is the El Dorado National Forest. That authority did not apply to that. We have been trying for more than a decade to get the Trestle Project done. That's a forest thinning project in the vicinity of Grizzly Flats. It had been held up all of those years by these laws and the litigation that flowed from these laws. And when the Caldor Fire came barreling through toward Grizzly Flat, it hit this Trestle Project, exploded out of control because we hadn't been able to do anything. And took out the entire town of Grizzly Flats. So H.R. 188 would simply take this proven practice and extend it throughout the national forest system. We got it out of the Natural Resources Committee. We even had one Democrat vote for it. I'm hoping there'll be a few more on the House floor. And I do think that there may well be enough Senate Democrats representing mountain states that will see the wisdom in this for their states as well. It's also the chief of the U.S. Forest Service, Randy Moore, was one of the people who was involved in implementing this law. He has been very, very complimentary of it. So we have an advocate, I think, within the administration itself. The problem is there's been such disorder in the House, we've not been able to get floor time yet for the bill to be passed over to the Senate. But I am hopeful that either in this session or the next one, we will be able to do so, and we'll begin to restore sound forest management to our national forests before they're consumed by catastrophic fire.
Seems like in the past, when there were bipartisan forestry bills, the late Senator Dianne Feinstein was in a lot of those conversations.
She was a tremendous asset and a great advocate. And she's a reason, by the way, why we were able to get past the opposition to Barbara Boxer and other leftist senators in the U.S. Senate and at least get that bill for the Tahoe Basin into the WIN Act. I miss her desperately right now, as we try to take this process that we know works, it's proven works, and extend it throughout our national forests.
So the two senators from California right now, they haven't stepped into that role on those forestry issues?
No.
Well, we've got just a couple minutes left on Motherlode Views. Any other bills or issues that you're keeping a close eye on?
Well, again, the committees of my concentration, I sit on the Judiciary Committee, and I chair the Immigration a Subcommittee of Judiciary. So I had a major role to play in H.R. 2, which is the reform bill that will make it much harder for future presidents to ignore our immigration laws, make it much easier for future presidents who want to enforce those laws to do so. It, among other things, makes permanent the Remain in Mexico policy of the Trump administration, orders completion of the border wall as the Trump administration was doing, and actually enforces our deportation orders. It would expedite the system dramatically. What it essentially does is it takes all of the incentive out of filing a phony asylum claim, which is the source of most of these admissions of illegal aliens into our country. So that's been a big focus, and we're continuing to put out bills from the Judiciary Committee on this subject. But again, they're all stopping in the Senate, and that's where the American people are going to have to weigh in and decide whether they want to enforce our immigration laws or not. If we don't enforce our immigration laws, we have no immigration laws. If we have no immigration laws, we have no borders. And if we have no borders, we have no country. And I think people are starting to feel the effect of that. That's where a great deal of my time and attention has gone. And of course, I also sit on the Budget Committee, and the budget reforms that are necessary to get our economy back in on solid ground are very frustrating, because we don't have a bipartisan consensus in Congress right now to reduce this record amount of spending that's destroying the value of our dollar.
We'll have to end on that note. Congressman McClintock, thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, BJ.
Again, we thank Congressman Tom McClintock for being our guest on Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.